John West, Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture for Ideal Future. In the intelligent design movement, we often focus on nonfiction books that typically are jam-packed with data and evidence and arguments. But the questions we grapple with, questions about the meaning of life, the universe, are really the stuff of great drama and art and music. So I'm really pleased to welcome today's episode of Ideal Future, Bruce Huff, whose first novel is making its debut, a novel that deals with many of the themes explored in the debate over intelligent design. Bruce traveled all the way to Seattle from New York City to be with us in person before this live audience in Seattle at our annual Insiders Briefing for supporters of the Discovery Institute. So let's give Bruce another warm Seattle welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
Thank you for joining us, Bruce. Your novel is a thrill, and it's titled The Soul of the Matter. It's being published by an imprint of Simon & Schuster, one of the top five publishers of books in English language, from the research I just did on it. I had the opportunity to read your novel in manuscript. I think it's wonderful, not just because there's a key chapter 57, by the way, that has a fictional visit to the headquarters of Discovery Institute. I thought the story was strong, it was gripping, the characters were real, the plot moves along, really well done, especially for a first novel. Before we get to the story itself, I wonder if you could give us a little bit about your own background, who you are, what got you interested in writing novels, explores, science, faith, Darwin, mind, materialism, and other really small questions like that.
Well, there's really nothing in my background that would have led anyone to believe I'd be in this spot right now. I took three fourths and go parts as a kid. I hated writing, at least creative writing. And I did some computer work. So I was from the New York City, Long Island area, still am. And I went to the University of Pennsylvania, school like we've been talking about today several times. And I set out to be a doctor pre-med, so I took a lot of natural sciences. And at some point I thought, you know, I'm not so sure I want to be a doctor. And I just happened to be at a place that had the Wharton School of Business. And so that's what I transferred into. I went into management consulting and information technology after that. And then at some point I thought of, I read a magazine cover in 1986 that said we had 20% of DNA in common that was identical. I just had this idea that it'd be an interesting story someday to go with that. And so for me, it was just a fun idea. I mean, I never thought about evolution except to say that, you know, it happened, we changed over time, and I felt it was directed, but I needed to go no further with that in my own mind, and it was just, that was it.
Okay. So that's really the whole plot directed. What's your story about?
Oh, that's fine. Basically, there is a former government cyber security analyst who's gotten most of what he's wanted in life. He was raised in a religious upbringing, but has discarded that belief, and he's now, I would say, a very aggressive atheist, and he's waking up to find out that, you know, the beliefs he's led, that he's had all this time, are no longer sufficient for him, and he's finding himself in a bad place. And he's contacted by his estranged childhood friend, who's a world-renowned geneticist, his name's Stephen Bishop, and he wants Dan's help to protect and secure his work. And he's claiming he's discovered astounding information encoded in DNA, and that includes proof of whether God exists or not. So intrigued by all of that, Dan agrees to help. And along the way, other parties become aware that this information may exist. It sets off the chase to possess and use that information. And the net result of all of this is Dan is challenged to understand what he is as a person, and what does it really mean? Does life have meaning? And will the soul survive science's apparent conquest of nature?
Mm. So is this a standalone book or part of a series?
It's the first of three. And so this one's focused heavily on evolution. The second one is going to talk a lot more about consciousness. And the third will tie it all together and get a little bit more into physics and things of that nature. But despite the topics, I want this first and foremost to be entertaining thriller for the readers. I mean, that's my primary purpose, is to have, you know, someone read this and enjoy it and turn the pages quickly and think it's fun. And the other stuff is just extra that I hope they find interesting and that I'm having fun learning about and writing about.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I like about it. It wasn't just a series of nonfiction dispositions on news on science. It was a story. And so when there were conversations with them, I kind of worked into the story as a natural progression of the characters. The subtitle, the book on the cover, is "Some Codes Weren't Meant to Be Broken." Want to fill us in on what that means, or is this supposed to be top secret?
No, that's fine. And the core premise of the book is laid out early on, is that there's not enough DNA to direct human development on a one-for-one instruction basis. Which basically means if you're cooking off of a recipe, you read one thing, you do one thing. Well, for DNA, and calculations aren't precise because the information is not well known, but the ratio is at least 1,000 to 1. So there's really complex algorithmic processing involved in using DNA to direct human development. So the idea is that this code is there by intent, by a very sophisticated means, and that if you start messing around with that, are there any restrictions on our ability to use it, whether that's encoded in the DNA itself, or it happens when we start trying to mess it around. So it's trying to raise the question of what we're going to be permitted to do with our origin.
Mm. What type of reaction are you anticipating?
Well, it depends. For people who don't subscribe or don't have an open mind about where science would bring us and what we're really about, I think the initial reaction is going to be just ignore it. They won't want to give it publicity. But if it gets some traction, as I hope that it will, then I think it'll be then a little bit more snarky and then a little bit more aggressive. But I think for the majority of people, what I hope the reaction is going to be is, this was a fun read and it raised some thought-provoking questions, and I'd like to see the next one.
Also, one question people might have, and the one that I had when I read it, was where does the science fact and the science fiction begin? And for people who are going to read it, so what is real here? What is anticipated? What is just fancy?
Well, that's a good question. My editor wanted to help me clear that up, so I have a 2.5-page addendum at the back of the book that says, this is what I believe to be true, this is what I'm speculating is true, and this is what I've just made up. So I wanted to, and it was fun. And, for example, the bit about the algorithmic compression of DNA, that fundamentally has to be true. There's no way 3 billion base pairs. If every single one of those base pairs is informational for human development, it's not even remotely enough to direct this. Because from the very beginning, even if the cells are identical, let's say like skin cells, bone cells, neurons, there has to be information on how they arrange, when they stop reproducing to create the shapes we are, and the relationships for our brain to work from day one, at least to a minimal degree. There's really no such thing as a self-organizing neural net at a certain level. So that I consider to be true. And then I talk about, of course, the ratio of the fundamental constants in physics, the ratio of four forces together, and things of that nature. I make up, of course, the idea that there is information encoded in DNA. And then I also talk a little bit in this one about consciousness, that there really isn't a way for discrete particles only consisting of objective states create whole subjective experiences. In other words, physical matter isn't enough for us to be seeing and hearing each other right now. And the implication of that is what Darwin called artificial selection, even natural selection, really is intelligent selection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you afraid that you might be an anti-science because of this book?
I'm sure some will make that claim. I'm not worried about that. I mean, I try to base everything in this book on evidence and reason, and certainly the scientific method and scientific evidence is part of that. But there's really nothing in science that you can point to with any degree of evidence that says the only thing you'll ever find in science is points to science alone. There's no reason that science can't point to something beyond itself. So if someone wants to take a hardcore position on that, they're not being scientific themselves, they're making a faith-based argument. Which I have fun pointing out to some people who have different views from time to time.
I wondered what sort of research you did apart from the science. Your novel is set in a lot of different places in the United States and in Europe. And I was wondering, is that based off of your own travels or just your
interest? Most of it's been through my own travels. I mean, part of it is places I just like. Part of it is places where things had to take place. So there's an important part of the book where it takes place at the fusion research reactor at MIT. There's only two of those in the US. I picked Boston because it was close to Cape Cod, where I know and like. And so I did visit the, I had a lot of dumb luck along the way, or coincidences. It turns out the person I worked with, his father was the director of that laboratory up there, and I got to visit them. And I happened to be out here in Seattle 2 years ago. I had gotten to know new folks. I was able to visit the Discovery Institute. I've been to the places in Italy that are in the book. So the only place in the book that I haven't been to personally is the Salk Institute. And I think my odds for visiting that may or may not be impacted by the book. I don't know.
So, final question. Where do people get the book or find out more information about it?
Well, I have a website that I'm very fortunate. Someone did a very nice job with that. It's brucebuck.com, very original name. And the book itself is listed on all the bookseller websites right now, like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everywhere else.
I just want to put in my own sort of encouragement for people who are listening today to get Bruce Buck's book. It is a great read. It's a great book to give to your friends. It's a great book to give to family members and relatives and people who might be sitting on the fence on some of these issues and who might not read a nonfiction book on this, but who like fiction, especially thrillers. This is a really good book. First, get it for yourself. Then start in social media, Twitter, Facebook, recommending it, and do reviews of it on Amazon. And let's do our best to make this a bestseller, because this is just a wonderful way to get out discussion of some of these really serious issues to many people who might not back a nonfiction book or watch a nonfiction documentary, because it is, first and foremost, a story. But it weaves in, like all great literature, serious and internal things. So, Bruce, thank you for being with us today. Let's give him a round of applause. For Writing the Future, this is John West. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.